And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right. It's the first Friday of the regular season.
Woo!
The camper lot is filling up just down the street from us.
Yeah, the mafia parking lot that's right over the fence there.
It's full.
I tried to count how many trailers were in there, campers were in there. I couldn't. I was like, it's like 10 to 14 of
all
them or something.
All you need to know is it's full.
It's full.
They're ready to rock.
They are in
the
there.
The team was practicing in the stadium as they typically do on Fridays. Some injury updates. The Bills will be without star Lotulelei on Sunday against the Steelers, which that has prompted a lot of Twitter responses from Bills fans, which says, oh boy, that means we're going to get a full load of Najee Harris, which could very well be the case. And the Bills have to be up to the task. We sat in on Coach McDermott's press conference just before practice late this morning. And, you know, because I was curious, hey, are you going to consider calling up, you know, Brandon Bryant from the practice squad, a defensive tackle who did okay in the preseason? Or are you going to ride with the four guys that you have healthy still on the roster, namely Harrison Phillips, Justin Zimmer, Vernon Butler, and Ed Oliver? And all indications seem to point to them relying on those four players. I would imagine, Steve, that Vernon Butler is going to have to play a little more one technique than three technique.
Yeah, well, they did it all last year, and they won 13 games last year. So they know their role, and they've been practicing it for a week since Star Lotulelei has not been out. So hasn't been practicing. So that, you know, yes, it's you'd like to see your best players out there. Star Lotulelei is one of those guys. You're not as good without him as you are with him,
yeah.
But you got guys out there that are ready to play too. And let's face it, nobody's going to lack emotion and energy tomorrow.
No.
So they'll be ready to go.
But still in all, I mean, Coach McDermott even admitted it's hard to replace a guy of his caliber. So that will be a noticeable absence from the defensive front on Sunday. Emmanuel Sanders, who has practiced all week on a limited basis, is going to be listed as questionable. Coach McDermott revealed that earlier this morning in an appearance on WGR. He said he will be limited in practice again today, and he will be listed as questionable for the game on Sunday. The good news concerning Sanders' toe, it's a toe injury, is he said his toe is improving. So, I don't know about you, Steve, but he's practiced all week, granted on a limited basis. We're told the toe is improving. I would tend to think he's on the more favorable side of questionable to play on Sunday.
Well, yeah, but
we're guessing, but
yeah, absolutely. This club has always kind of erred on the side of safety with the players. They'll give a hamstring an extra week. You know, they'll give Star Lotulelei, they'll give Star an extra week, you know, even if he thought he might be able to go today. They're going to hold him out. All these guys, they've done it on a regular basis throughout Sean McDermott's tenure here with his medical staff and with his training staff and the sports science staff. They give the guys all the time they need so they can come back 100% healthy. So I don't think they feel any undue pressure to get these guys out there just because this is opening day and it's time. They're going to make sure these guys are ready to play. And if you're not ready to play, the chances of you getting hurt are, to me, tenfold. You know, Emmanuel Sanders' toe, you can just bet that he's going to aggravate it and it's going to start dragging it around. His calf, I mean, you can easily pop that calf again. Now he's out for another 3 weeks just because you wanted him on opening day. So this staff has always erred on the side of getting him 100% before you come back so you don't string the thing out for a month and a half after the fact.
Right, yeah. So we'll have to see where it goes. And as I said, Coach McDermott gave indication that they're going to ride with basically the four healthy defensive tackles that they have, which basically means Harrison Phillips and I would anticipate Vernon Butler are going to have the majority of the one technique load, both being over 300 pounds. Zimmer's a little bit lighter. He can stand in there and grind if you want him to. I don't know that he's an ideal fit for that role. He's more of a penetrating type. So it'll be interesting to see what the rotation is and if any of the defensive ends try to help out here and there in certain spots and kick down inside, like an F.A. Obata, for example. So We'll have to see how that unfolds on Sunday. There are some unfortunate injuries around the league. And the Baltimore Ravens, Steve, my God, they look like this year's San Francisco 49ers, and we haven't even gotten to the regular season yet. The Niners got all beat up in weeks 2 and 3, losing 4 or 5 starters to season-ending injuries. The Ravens haven't even gotten to the season yet. They lost 2 guys in the span of 15 minutes at practice yesterday. Cornerback Marcus Peters, a starter. Running back Gus Edwards, who has taken over the starting role after they already lost J.K. Dobbins to a torn Achilles. They both tear their ACLs. They're both done for the year.
Right. It's.
Are we checking the field surface there?
Like something in the water there.
Are we checking the field surface? Seriously, like the practice field.
I didn't know.
Non-contact, both of those.
ACLs are like COVID over there. Everybody's catching it. You know,
it's terrible.
It's bad. I don't want to mean to make light of it, but it's so bad. It's common. You have to laugh. I mean, John Harbaugh's got to be looking over there going, what? He's got a what?
And they got to put tight end Tim Boyle on short-term IR. He's not their starting tight end, but he's their number two guy. He's going on short-term IR. I mean, they are a MASH unit right now. It is a mess in Baltimore, and they haven't even played game one. I mean, that's just – they stopped practice. They had 2 ACL injuries in the span of 15 minutes. Harbaugh's like, we're calling it. Everybody inside, we're done. Like, you want to talk about taking the collective air out of the room. Yeah. You have 2 big injuries like that to 2 starters you know you're depending on going into the season? My God. Well, and how do you recover from that?
You're like 48 hours away from the season.
Yeah, it's not like, hey, we got 3 weeks to fill the void here. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's see if there's anybody out there.
They're going to sign Lev Bell and get him.
Signed Latavius Murray, too.
So they got guys, but they're brand new. And they're, you know, basically they signed 2 guys that were not playing football because nobody wanted them to play football.
Right.
That doesn't make you better. That's the most frustrating part about football. We used to have a thing in our practice regime. You know, you go out and do one-on-ones, and it's like, you know, Andre Reed against, you know, Nate Odoms, and, you know, all these guys, Henry Jones and Kelso and all these guys, these defensive backs from back in the 90s. We'd all go out and we go one-on-one against them all the time. It's me against you, and let's go. We run a route, and the quarterback throws the ball, and you do it. And it got to be so prevalent around the National Football League. Every time you hear a guy that he got, you know, injured, it was always the same line. Say, oh, it was the last rep of practice, or it was the last time. Da-da-da. So whenever we had it, they'd blow the whistle, and guys were lined up there, just about ready to snap the ball. They'd blow the whistle. We would jump in and grab them so they wouldn't go. We wouldn't let them take another rep because you knew they knew it was the last rep. Something would pop. We'd lose one of them for a week or lose one of them for the season. So we just had an unwritten rule in our receivers group and our defensive backs group that last rep wouldn't get taken because it was such a thing around the league that we just stopped doing it. So superstition? Yeah, probably. But it's a real thing. If John Harbaugh, if you told John Harbaugh throwing chicken bones onto the practice field, he would do it.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about
or a little garlic or
whatever, right?
Wear a garlic necklace to practice so you don't get hurt.
Yeah, burn a roll of tape or something, right?
Do anything.
It's whatever it takes, because that's how superstitions start. Mm-hmm. You get something that it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's like people are looking sideways at each other, like, what is going on? You don't think. John Harbaugh and the staff are looking at each other.
They're snake bit, man. There are other injuries around the league. Washington football team coach Ron Rivera just announced about an hour ago that wide receiver Curtis Samuel is going on short-term IR with a groin injury. So he's going to miss the first 3 games of the season at least, and maybe more, depending on how quickly he is able to recover from that. So there's that injury, and there are some other more minor injuries, but Xavier Rhodes has a calf injury for the Colts, and it looks like he's not going to be able to play on Sunday against Seattle. So now the Colts go into that game without one of their starting corners facing DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Like, yeah.
That's you take it for granted until it's the opposite, right? And you think, okay, let's just line up and play. I mean, I thought, and I said this as early as late as last week, late last week and early this week. At least you know everybody's going to be ready to go on opening day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what was I thinking?
This just was posted by Brooke Pryor, ESPN reporter for the covering the Pittsburgh Steelers. And they were just interviewing Najee Harris after practice. And he was asked, if given a choice, would you rather play in an away game or a fun game or a home game? He said, I'd rather play in an away game because it's more fun. Playing in front of Bills Mafia for his first NFL game is perfect as he sees it, because he says it's always fun to see their faces and their eyes in the crowd. You can silence that crowd, and that's the best feeling.
Yeah.
How do we feel about that?
Yeah, I get it.
It's a little easier to do that when you're playing for Alabama.
Right. He's used to silencing crowds. He's going to find out the NFL is a little bit different animal.
I think so. I mean, I'm not saying they can't win, because they certainly could.
No, they're a very good team, and I think a lot of Bills fans are underestimating him, in my opinion.
He's a good player, really good player. Big, strong, fast. He's going to be a really productive NFL player. But, yeah, they're not playing Wake Forest this weekend. I get it. To watch the guy in the preseason and watch and get a feel for him, he's really good. You know, that Leonard Fournette last night for the Buccaneers is one of those kind of guys. Man, yep. He's a difference maker. More and more, though, and this is why you and I have had this conversation a ton. It's a throwing league, bro.
Yeah, it is.
Did you see the game last night?
Yeah.
It's a throwing league.
All of you who drafted Ezekiel Elliott in your fantasy football leagues, I hope you're ready to be disappointed.
I don't want to go out too far into this, because I know it's down, we can get in the weeds. The Dallas Cowboys just stumbled the way of the game last night. Zeke Elliott, a veteran running back, running out of bounds and inside a minute to go. What are you doing? And then I know this. Any Bills fans who are out there watching Tom Brady and the Bucks, they get the ball back with a minute 43 or something instead of a minute, or instead of whatever 40 seconds or 30 seconds, they get the ball with like 53 seconds or something like that. I don't know what it was. You just knew it was going to happen. It didn't matter what the clock said.
Yeah.
If it was that minute, you just needed two more plays to run out.
I'm just sitting there saying, how long had Mike McCarthy been away from football? Did he forget, like, how much time Tom Brady needs to lead a game-winning drive?
He looked like a dope.
I mean,
what are you doing?
He was coaching in 1995.
Does anybody tell Ezekiel Elliott to stay in bounds? Nobody coaches that? I mean, and Tom Brady's back there like, It was easy. Oh, my gosh. It looked like, oh, my gosh. Seriously? You just played 60 minutes to give the guy this? Kicking a winning field goal with 2 seconds left on the clock? Left 2 seconds left. That's how you manage the clock, Mike.
Yeah. Not that the Bucs were perfect either.
They were -3 in turnovers.
And had like 10 penalties for over 100 yards.
They stunk.
Yeah.
And beat a Cowboys team that was too stupid to take it from them. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Dak Prescott's going, oh my gosh, really? I mean, I got surgery on my ankle. I come back and I work so hard to do this. And Mike, you know. Oh, Bruce Arians over there going, ha! Look at you guys. He's like, Bruce Arians, 68 years old. He can't even raise his arm completely in the air. He just raised it up over just up like ear level.
I laughed last night because Chris Collinsworth is talking about that pack, you know, his communication pack that he straps to his chest instead of his belt.
He looks like
he's hooked up to an EKG.
It's like
I thought was a little insensitive since the man's already had a heart attack in his life.
It looked like it was a defibrillator getting just ready in case.
In case
the stress got to him, they just pushed the button instead of having to set him up.
Are terrible.
It's unbelievable. And how much could that thing weigh that he can't wear it around his waist?
Well, it's too big to put on a belt. I think that's safe to say. But
like in 2020, in the year 2021, you can't have the technology.
The thing he's using, that thing's a honker, man.
It's the size of a microwave oven. It looks like he's got
Maybe he's warming up some popcorn.
Well, it looks like he can
for halftime.
He can throw a quesadilla in that thing. All right, what do you
got to find out exactly what that is?
You can't get a more streamlined piece of technology. I know it's expensive. I mean, I know you're probably,
this is the NFL though, right?
Right.
Like, what are we doing? Oh my God, that thing is hilarious.
He's got a toaster oven on his chest.
An easy bake. He's got an easy bake strapped to,
laughing so
strapped
hard.
To his chest.
I knew that I knew in the last three or four plays, Dak Prescott and the Dallas offense was clicking.
Yeah.
I mean, they looked good last night. They were getting first downs, all that. And I say this, if it weren't for their apparent like mandate that they got to give Ezekiel Elliott the ball a certain amount of times.
He only carried it 11 times.
Yeah, he should have carried it like six.
Well, yeah, and that's why I was applauding their offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, because here's a young guy that knows where the league is headed. He recognized the strength of the Bucs defense, which is right down the middle.
And then they
lost
a corner.
You got Sue, Vita Vea in the middle, and you got Devin White and Levante David behind him. You're not running between the tackles in the game. I don't care how good your offensive line is. And their line is pretty good. But you didn't have Zach Martin in this game. So throw the ball. And they did, with a lot of success. So I tip my hat to Kellen Moore. The problem was he had a head coach that was coaching like it was 1995.
It was 1965. Yeah, Kellen Moore did a very nice job, I thought, last night. And so did Dak. Dak played very well. Their offensive line was overmatched inside. Ndamukong Suh and Vita Vea. Vita Vea was a steamroller. He was putting the guard in Dak Prescott's lap all night.
Yep.
He was running wind sprints. And Dak did an outstanding – he did a great job. I mean, there were a couple of throws I was like, wow, Dak, what are you doing? You know, but – and he got lucky a couple of times, no question. A pick that was going to be a pick going the other way got tipped by the underneath defender. He's throwing it through two guys,
yeah.
And it would have gotten picked if the first guy hadn't got a hand on it. But for the most part, you know, threw for 400 yards, three TDs and a pick. It was a great outing by their offense. CD Lamb didn't help him, and he ended up with a great statistical night, but he stunk in the first 10 minutes of that
drops.
Game. He stunk. They got four turnovers from the Buccaneers, which is uncharacteristic. I mean, and they had a chance to come down and win it, but you why do you not? The clock management.
I love when you get
end of that game. I mean, my mom, bless her heart, she knew they should have stayed in bounds.
Yeah.
She's 91.
It's poor clock management.
At
every turn.
They did it. There's about four or five times on that last drive where they could have just put the screws to the buck, and they just didn't.
Yeah.
And
you can't leave any time on the clock for Brady.
No.
You just can't. The only time where the opponent didn't leave enough time on the clock for him was Philly in the Super Bowl. You remember that? And he's still heaving a bomb to the end zone, and that almost happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you can't leave the door open a crack. I mean, if you haven't learned after 20 years of watching this guy that you can't leave time on the clock for him, well, then you deserve to lose. And that's what Mike McCarthy got.
This just in, you're opening on the road in the home stadium where the Super Bowl happened and the home team won it. And it's their opening game the next season. Like, raise the banner, show the rings,
shoot
and
the
you're
fireworks.
Walking in there. You got to be on it as a coaching staff, and they were not.
No,
they were not.
The Bucs did not play a perfect game
by
any
horrible.
Stretch.
The Bucs were horrible and won that game.
The difference was, you know, they have the GOAT,
and by the way. I hate to say it. He's still playing great.
Oh, my gosh.
He played so good.
When is this guy just going to even look old? Can we just get him to look old, like appear just a little rickety? I got to tell you, Steve.
I agree with
you. I was watching him, you know, covering this team as long as we have. We're watching him in 2010, and we're just like, oh, my God, this is endless.
Yeah.
Like, he had already been a starter for almost a decade.
Right.
And I'm just like, well, you know, at some point.
Just wait it out.
At some point,
his head coach is in his mid-60s.
You know, at some point,
they'll phase out.
He's going to retire, and we can finally have a shot at something. Now, they're blessed with the fact that he leaves the division, but did anybody expect – I mean, first of all, I didn't expect him to play in New England as long as he did. I thought he'd be done by, you know, 2017, 18,
right.
Somewhere in there.
Tops.
That's here a long career. Here we are in 2021, and they were showing some stats on his release point or his release time. His throwing motion has a quicker release now than it did 10 years ago because he's worked on it.
He's better. He's better.
It's just, come on, man.
And I'll say this, too. During the broadcast last night, Collinsworth and Al Michaels didn't mention it. But in the last drive, in the last two drives, I think, in certain situations, short yardage, third downs, Brady would look over at Byron Leftwich, the offensive coordinator of the Bucs, and he would shake his head and just say, no.
Yeah.
No. He didn't want to do that. He had a real clear idea of what he did, and certainly – then they'd do it, and he'd call the play. But he was waving Byron Leftwich off. He did it at least three times in the last 3 minutes of that game, the last maybe two drives. He waved him off twice. And I'd be really interested to see what that – because I saw him later. They were face-to-face, you know, because it was all loud and stuff at the end of the – and when there were 2 seconds left and the game was almost over and it was all over and, you know, except the celebration, Brady – was talking to him, and they were having a serious conversation. I know that it was about the play selection and what they were both thinking and all of that.
I think I'd be okay trusting him.
Right.
If he's waving me off.
And Leftwich is no fool.
I think I would trust him.
Yeah, and I'm sure
I mean, really?
That happens less. It happens more this year than it did last year. You know what I'm saying? Now they've got a year under their belt and all that, and Tom's looking at him going, no. And then – I'm sure that there's a short list in certain situations, and they'll go to the next play, and he'll say, yeah.
I got this.
Yeah, but it's – yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Brady just look over, and play clock's moving. It's a huddle, and he's like shaking his head, and you can just read his lips going, no.
Now, you and I obviously have not had to deal with Brady our entire lives, but just think about Bills fans that are about 18, 19 years old, 20 years old. It has been a ubiquitous narrative in their entire life as a football fan. My son had a dartboard in the basement with Brady's face on it in 2010. Yeah. He was six. He's 17 now, and he's still watching this guy.
I get it. You're right.
I mean, he has not known any different.
You're right. And I say this, there'll be a time, you know, when the guy's in the Hall of Fame, maybe, where you can look back and kind of be better and appreciate the guy.
Oh, I respect it.
Absolutely.
Don't get me wrong.
Everybody does.
I respect it, but it doesn't mean I have to
like it. Bills fans begrudgingly, they don't want to talk about the respect that's there. You know, that's not part of the conversation. They'll do that when he's, you know, when he's dead. But you got to know at some certain point you're going to be able – all these young – like your son and my kids are going to talk to their kids – about, you don't know nothing.
Yeah.
We had to live through that guy. You know that's happening with that generation. And it's going to be happening now in the NFC South, too. It's pretty amazing because he's a better, younger, fitter-looking guy now at 40, what, 4?
44.
Than he was at 30.
This isn't his last year. There's no way in hell.
He looks awesome.
No way in hell. When he first signed with the Bucs, he said, I'm definitely giving you 2 years.
Right.
That was the original agreement.
Yeah. Then after last year,
the way this guy's playing right now.
They've said it already publicly. He can play as long as he wants. And that means even when he stinks, if it ever happens.
I mean, man alive. Ratings-wise, the game did very well, too.
I was hammered.
They were anticipating this. They were anticipating NFL ratings to be up. They thought the telecast would be even more entertaining with crowds back in the stands, the atmosphere, all of that. And that's proven to be true. Obviously, with all of the gambling and sportsbook partnerships that are popping up in terms of partnering with the NFL, they believe that's going to drive increased viewership because you got a little money on the game. People are going to be more – they're going to be tuning in to Bengals-Browns, you know, on a Thursday. Overnight, so this is from John Auerrand from Sports Business Journal, NBC's coverage of the Cowboys-Bucks game hit a 5-year high in the overnight ratings. 15.9 is the rating. It's up 16% from last year, and the number doesn't include out-of-home viewing, bars, restaurants, that kind of thing. So the final national number is almost certain to be an even bigger increase than the 16% initially reported.
It is, yeah.
Thing is a juggernaut.
It's the 800-pound gorilla in sports television. And no, it's the 800-pound gorilla in television.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. End of story. No need to go on.
Full stop. You know, it's the property to own and have a piece of, and that's the reason everybody was watching that game last night.
We mentioned the Bills injury report. No star Latulule on Sunday, and Emmanuel Sanders is going to be listed as questionable, according to Coach McDermott, with his toe injury. Practicing today, but on a limited basis. The Steelers have healed up considerably. We were talking yesterday on the show about rookie center Kendrick Green with a thumb injury. We did not ascertain whether that was on his snapping hand, but he was a full participant in practice on Thursday, so he appears to be good to go for the Steelers and make his first career start at center on Sunday. Meanwhile, defensive end Tyson Alualu, big body in that 3-4 front for them, has been dealing with an elbow injury. He, too, practiced fully on Thursday. The only question mark here is their starting outside linebacker Alex Highsmith, who did not practice after being limited with a groin injury on Wednesday. So perhaps he has taken a step back. Coach Tomlin, when asked today prior to practice as to whether Alex Highsmith would play on Sunday, he said, wait for the injury report. That's what he told the media in Pittsburgh today. So probably not good for Alex Highsmith, knowing he took a step back and did not practice at all on Thursday. So we'll wait for the Steelers injury report to come out later this afternoon, see if he's declared as out, questionable, what have you. So that you're brought up to date on that. Obviously, it is Friday, which means the OBL Friday fan mailbag is open for you to submit your questions to Steve and myself. So we welcome your questions, anything and everything. Maybe you're wondering who's going to fill in for Star, something like that. We'll try to answer that for you. Maybe you have another question about coming back to the stadium. We'll try to answer those intelligently, although it seems like things are, are changing all the time. So we'll do our best to answer those, but fire them off to us at One Bills Live on Twitter, and we'll get to them in short order. Second hour of the show, we've got the one, the only, Greg Cosell from NFL Films, going to break down some of the matchups coming up in this game on Sunday. So we look forward to that since he's been crunching the film all week long. And essentially, Coach McDermott in his comments today prior to practice indicated that Levi Wallace will start at cornerback. I think it was a foregone conclusion. We all assumed that he had won the starting job in the competition with Dane Jackson, but McDermott, without saying he's the starter at corner, all but confirmed it at the press conference this morning. So I think we've brought you up to speed. The only thing we left out, Steve, the Cam Newton sit-down interview with his dad, Cecil. Did you see any of that?
I did not see it. I read first of all, aftermath. Yes.
First of all, he did not disappoint with the fashion statement he decided to make.
Right.
He had a hat, a wide-brim hat all the way around. You know, not as big as Pharrell, the musician, but
right.
Pretty big hat. And there was apparently a hole in the top because you know how he has his hair stick straight up off the top of his head? It was coming through the top of the hat from what I could see. It was, let's just say, interesting to say the least. But yes, Cam Newton, among his comments, said he felt that the only reason he was released was because... There, look at that, Steve. What do you think? Our MSG viewers looking at this. That's his hair.
It looks like...
I think it's
his
hair.
Yeah, it looks...
coming right out of the top of his hat.
It looks photoshopped.
Ah.
So.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's definitely his hair.
Yeah.
I've
seen him put feathers and stuff in his hat band.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
yes,
not
he has
that
done
is.
That, but that...
No, it's that
That looks like his fro.
It's that top knot thing that he's been doing, yeah.
So there's that.
But, and he was, and forget about the fashion statement.
Yeah, what he said was more important.
Yeah, what he was there to talk about, and he's, you know, he said, hey, I absolutely would have been Mac's backup if they asked me to be. He would.
He said he would.
But he said his, yeah. You say it. I can't say it.
Hold on, I got to pull it up. Yeah, he basically insinuated that all along it was trending in this direction to go with Mac Jones, because even though he was getting the first team reps and Mac was not, he would get two and then Mac would get the next 10. So he said it was evident the direction they wanted to go. But essentially, he said his aura was the reason they chose not to keep him as a backup, which he cites as a blessing and a curse.
His aura is a blessing, and he used that word, aura, as a blessing and a curse.
I got to tell you, after being cut by an NFL team and losing a starting job to a rookie, the ego is very healthy right now for Cam Newton.
Yeah, he's... Yeah,
if you're talking about your aura,
he can be
as the main reason he could not function as a backup,
and that's why
he felt he would be a distraction. He felt the Patriots would see him as a distraction, as a backup to Mac, in the event that, you know, he has a bad game or he struggles. Oh, I put Cam in. That's his opinion.
And he's probably got something there, because that's also maybe part of the reason why teams may or may not be banging down his door.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not sure what team I would look at, unless it was a team like, I don't know, Tennessee, or somebody who doesn't have a, you know, like a Kansas City even, or somebody who doesn't have a an established backup or a quarterback room that would be in flux, Jacksonville, that kind of thing. But here's the thing. There's also this, Brownie. It's been a while since we've seen him play adequate football.
Correct.
Not great, just adequate. He was bad last year. Really bad. And he didn't look all that much better this year. So
he's a shell of what he used to be.
That's so what are we talking about? You know, what's he? I mean, is there a job for him out there? And he'll say, he said this, there's not 32 guys better than me.
Well,
I don't know.
I respectfully disagree.
I don't know if there aren't.
Steve, I said it last year at the end of the season. I don't know if Cam is going to be a starter in this league ever again.
And I know you thought, you've said it too in passing. I don't know that you really meant it, but you said you don't think he'll ever start another game.
I don't. Not as the true blue starting quarterback for an NFL team.
Yeah,
there's too much. Too much of his game has now deteriorated. I mean, they had 8 passing touchdowns last year, Steve. Think about that for a second. In this era of the NFL. 8 passing touchdowns. I mean, that is anemic. That's anemic.
Rough. That's rough.
You can't win that way. It is, I got to tell you, people should have considered Bill Belichick for coach of the year last year. How he navigated that team to 7 victories last year, that's a miracle. It's a miracle.
Yeah.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a new part of the show here on Fridays, where we get your take on your tailgate. We'll explain when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, people, it is Tailgate Friday, which is presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York, the official health plan of the Buffalo Bills. Before we went to break, I mentioned how we kind of put out the query to let us know what your tailgate or pregame plans are for Sunday. So some people are tailgating already in the camper lot as we drove in here this morning. But Dinah leads us off here on the Tailgate Friday tweet sheet, which, as always, is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York. So Dinah says, I'll be watching the game at home. Every time the Bills score, I'll call my 86-year-old mother, and we sing the shout song together like we did when we went to the games. Now, if that is not the sweetest thing you have ever heard, I don't know what is.
Awesome.
I mean, come on. 86-year-old mom singing the shout song? That's passion there.
There you go. That's awesome.
Chris says, oh, no, not that one. Let's see. Oh, yeah, Chris, you can find me with 70,000 of my best friends on Sunday. Let's go. So he's just going to be there. just being there is going to be enough for a lot of people because, you know, you haven't been in the sea of humanity that is Highmark Stadium for over a year.
Wow.
And even the people that were there for the playoff games were only there with 6,799 of their best friends.
I got a couple of videos from my golfing partner that he goes to the game. He's been going to games forever, and he's got a couple of videos of kickoffs and touchdowns and all that. And you look around, and it really feels like, wow, you forget what it's like to see all the people in that stadium. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing to see.
I mean,
see
how much of a difference did it make on the telecast last night?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And that's not even a super raucous fan base down there in Tampa. No offense to them, but it's just not the same. Jason says, Friday is when I start tailgating.
Yeah.
I hope you make it to Sunday, pal. Pace yourself.
You got time to sober up again.
Start all over. Right. Take Saturday off. Resume Sunday.
Resume Saturday
Part
night.
Part two.
Cut it off a little bit early Saturday night or whatever.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, there you go.
Alan says, mafia sauce, vodka, two cases of Labatt Italian sausage ready to be grilled. Sunday can't come soon enough. Go Bills. Locked, stocked, and loaded.
It's a. I think that's mafia sauce vodka. There is a thing.
Okay.
Called that.
Yeah, I saw a period after mafia sauce, so I thought he was separating the two, but maybe not. You could be right.
There was an event I saw.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I happened to.
Steve is in the know on this, so good on you.
Mafia sauce vodka. You talk about a marketing plan. That's it right there.
You think?
Wow.
From the humble process.
Set up a little gazebo out on the parking lot.
Hey, do whatever you need to do. From the humble process at home, but doing the same thing we do at the stadium. Steak sandwiches, brats, chili, well done, and ice cold beer. Sides will be more diverse than the usual. Deviled eggs.
Nice.
Hand-cut fries, baked beans, and salad. I'm not eating tomorrow night.
Right.
Just save up the space. It's like you're going into a competitive eating contest.
I've got a little
skip dinner on Saturday night.
I've got a little space in my heart for deviled eggs.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Steve, we had deviled eggs at our wedding reception.
Oh, yeah.
There were two people in my wedding party that went hard.
Oh, yeah.
On the deviled eggs.
Yeah. And lived to regret it.
Maybe a little too hard.
Drank to regret it.
But all I remember is there were like three platters.
Oh, yeah.
Of deviled eggs. And we, you know, we're still going table to table. Thanks for coming. Blah, blah, blah. We come back like, where the hell are the deviled eggs?
Right.
And it's like, yeah, two guys in your wedding party housed about half a tray on their own. I was like, what?
I grew up going to church potluck dinners. And that was a staple.
A little paprika on top of it's really good.
Just house.
Really good.
Just house those things, man. Yeah. Just,
oh,
they're so good.
They are, they're the, like you have slider burgers.
Yeah.
Like if you don't have a slider burger, that's the closest thing to a slider because those things
just go down. And that's not, here's the thing too. They're not for everybody.
They're for me.
But yeah. It seems like that. They're a little bit polarizing, right?
They're so good.
Kind of like, I don't know, what it, something else like them, like mayonnaise or whatever. Like some people are like, yeah, mayonnaise, and other people are like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Deviled eggs are kind of like that. But I am all about those things.
Did you see the guy at the Clemson-Georgia game last week with the jar of mayonnaise in the stands?
I did, yeah.
That was alarming.
That was disturbing.
I mean, that is
that
just.
That was disturbing.
But you couldn't look away. That was the thing. Like, I couldn't look away.
Here's how I got through it.
I'm waiting for him to puke.
Here's my advice. Here's how I got through it. It was a put-on.
Right.
It was vanilla yogurt.
Oh, you think so?
That's how I got through it. I don't know that it was mayonnaise or not. I'm just saying I just can't think about somebody doing that with
a big jar
of mayonnaise. So I'm thinking, you know what? It was just yogurt. He was fooling us.
I will say that it did drip with the consistency of yogurt. So you might be onto something there.
Yeah.
Mayonnaise is thicker than that.
Yeah, I could not. It was like I say, it was disturbing.
It was unsettling for my stomach. I can't imagine what it's doing to his.
It was a video, and I couldn't watch it, let alone be there to witness it. But I'm thinking.
Yeah, me and my son are watching. He's
thinking,
like, okay, this is awful. He goes, I can't look away.
I know. It was, right?
Because this is so disgusting, like, but I have to keep watching.
Like right we're right about now. We're in game day mode. We're just talking about all the sites. But yes, I'm the only way I could get my mind around that was if I told myself, no, that's he's putting us on because that's
yeah.
Because if I would have believed that that was
you would have started gagging, or
I would have been like,
yeah,
ooh.
Yeah, I couldn't have done it.
I couldn't have done it.
I mean, I like mayo on my sandwich, but man. Not like that. Oh. That's extreme.
Yeah.
Jack on the Tailgate Friday tweet sheet says, honey Cajun and spicy barbecue wings on my new charcoal kettle grill. Also, sausage stuffed cherry peppers. Homegrown and homemade. Ooh, I like the sound of that. Got to find out where Jack's
at. Extra effort.
And chip dip with plenty of local beer, of course. Not sure what everyone else is making, but mine will be a hell of a feast.
Yeah, it sounds good. You start talking
about I love when they start chest pounding.
Yes.
You know? Tailgaters, they got a lot of pride in their work, you know?
There's a little something to it because, think about it. He home grew the peppers and he made the sausages. It's got to be spectacular. If it was mediocre, he wouldn't do it again, right? Because that's a big effort.
Yeah.
That's got to be spectacularly delicious to put that kind of effort in time and time again to do that. Because obviously, I'm thinking this isn't the first time he's ever done it, right? This is not an experimental dish.
Doesn't sound like his first rodeo.
And I think if you're going to put that kind of effort in, the feedback you've gotten from the people that are eating it has got to be off the charts.
Yeah. We have to take a break here, but that was the Tailgate Friday tweet sheet presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York, the official health care plan of the Buffalo Bills. When we come back, we will get to some of your questions from the OBL Fan Friday mailbag. And don't forget, coming up second hour of the show, from NFL Films, one Greg Cosell, who's also going to have the first edition of the ESPN NFL matchup show with Matt Bowen and Sal Palantonio. And I know for a fact the Bills and the Steelers are on their breakdown docket. So we'll talk to that with him about that with him in the next hour here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. Closing out hour number one here with the OBL Friday Fan Mailbag, brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. Max leads us off with the following, Steve. The defensive coordinator of Pittsburgh talked a little junk about Allen running with the football, even saying, I hope he tries to finish runs like a running back. We'll treat him like a running back, end quote. Is this the standard and nothing to worry about, or is it a little out of character? Obviously, we want Josh healthy moving forward. If the question is about what Keith Butler, the defensive coordinator, is saying about Josh, you know, it's just a shot across the bow thing. It's an attempt at intimidation. I don't think it's going to affect Josh one bit. At the same time, I will say this. I don't believe Josh is going to run as much this year as he has in years past.
He didn't run much last year.
No, he didn't. And I think the only time we're going to see him run between the 20s is when the play breaks down completely and he has no options in the passing game. Then I think he runs. In the red zone is the other place where I think he might run. Quarterback draw, rollouts, and then deciding to tuck it and run. Those are the instances where I think he runs with the football.
Saying this?
Yeah.
You want me to translate this, give you my translation of this? He says, I hope he tries to run and finish runs like a running back. We'll treat him like a running back. That means, gosh, I hope he don't run the ball. Do not run the ball on this. If he runs the ball, we got problems. That's what he's saying. He says, I hope he runs the ball so we can finish him off like a running back. Da-da, we're going to make it bad. That's when you're trying to get the guy not to run the ball. That's what that is. That doesn't mean I think Josh should run the ball or whatever. That means that when a quarterback has the ability to run the ball and throw it like Josh Allen can, you got no answers. You can stop him doing one, but he's going to kill you with the other. And if he kills you with the other and you stop him in the other, he's going to kill you with the first thing. He can do it either way. You want to make it so that the Bills are unwilling to use him to 100% of his capabilities, because if they do, you have no answers. Right. That's what that statement by
Keith Butler watched the tape last year. He watched the Denver game.
Ask Robert
Sala. He watched
Sala.
The San Francisco game.
Yeah. Watch that
there
game.
There were no answers.
Watch the Denver game. Those got two defensive-minded. Robert Sala, the defensive coordinator of the Niners last year and the head coach of the Jets this year, and Vic Fangio, head coach of the Denver Broncos last year, were out of ammunition.
They were checking for rain out there.
They were out of ammunition.
They were out there checking for rain, palms up. They were, what am I going to do here?
They were gunfighters who had run out of ammo about early in the third quarter. Neither one of them had any answers. And that's this statement by Keith Butler is gamesmanship, no question about it.
The Bills' Friday injury report is out, and there are no surprises. Star Lotulelei, as Coach McDermott said earlier this morning on WGR Radio, is out for Sunday's game. And then Emmanuel Sanders listed as questionable with a foot injury. So that is it. Those are the only players. One is out, one is in question, that being Emmanuel Sanders, although Coach McDermott did say today before practice that Sanders' toe, which is the injury of note here, is getting better, or foot, I should say.
So if foot is getting think about better. This. Sanders goes down. Does that mean Kumerow's active?
No.
He's going to be active anyway.
Well, they had six receivers active every game last year.
But that does that mean they go seven active and Isaiah McKenzie? Well, McKenzie's going to be
they don't have
active.
Seven on the roster right now.
They only
Stevenson
have seven.
Is on IR. They only have six.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
So all
do
six.
Do they bring Hodgins or Tanner Gentry off the practice squad?
Maybe. I don't know.
That means Kumerow's in the mix.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And he would be up anyway to play special teams.
Right.
So
they're going to have all – if Sanders is down, that's the only reason they don't have six wideouts.
Yeah. Which would be the first time in over a season that would be the case. So, yeah, I suppose a call-up is possible if he can't play. But I would tend to think with him practicing all week – that he's on the – I would think he's on the more – I don't know this. I'm just guessing based on his – he's participated all week long, granted on a limited basis.
I think
he's on the more favorable side of
I don't. Yeah, I don't know what his – whether it's turf toe or whether it's something else.
They haven't been on turf much.
They'll give him some help with a tape job and whatever else they can do for him medically.
Yeah.
They'll make him feel better. The question is, does this little fanny pack that he has to carry around with him as a toe injury turn into a steamer trunk where he's got to lug that thing around for 6 weeks, you know? It's luggage.
Yeah, you don't want it to turn into something bigger.
Right. You don't
nagging,
want to get it to where you can't carry it.
Chronic. You don't want any of that stuff.
Right.
All right, we have to take a break here because when we come back, senior producer from NFL Films and the co-host of ESPN's NFL Matchup Show, Greg Cosell, joins us to discuss some of the matchups in this game between the Bills and the Steelers as he tells us what the film is telling him. We'll catch up with Greg next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Steve Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve!
A balloon.
Steve! A blimp? We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are on a Friday, and you know what that means. It's time to assess the matchups. And here to help us with that for Bills Steelers on Sunday is a guy that crunches film because it's fun for him. It's NFL Films senior producer Greg Cosell, who also will be on ESPN's NFL Matchup Show, and I believe Bill Steelers is a part of the program. Is that correct, Greg?
It is the first game in our show,
Ooh,
actually.
Wow, this kicking off the new season
Look
with Bill Steelers.
Well,
nice.
Well, that's because Sal Palantonio is doing the game, so he's going to be there, you know.
All right. You
know how that works.
There's always an ulterior motive with Sal, I tell
it's
you.
The most, you know, therefore, that makes it the most important game of the weekend, which, of course, it is. But, you know,
absolutely,
you know, he's going to be there.
I get you.
Oh, my God, that's awesome.
Yeah.
We're let's begin with Josh, because a lot of people after the breakout season last year are wondering where his game goes from here. And I think while a lot of people are, at least Steve and I, are trying to be realistic and recognize the fact that that was a pretty extraordinary season. Just matching those numbers is going to be a challenge this year, even with an extra game. I don't want to speak for Steve, but I think we're anticipating that the improvements in Josh's game this year might be more nuanced and less easily recognizable to maybe the casual fan. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, given who they're playing this week, because I think you could argue that that Pittsburgh game a year ago, week 14, was actually one of his better games, given the nature of the opponent. Because as you guys probably recall, that game, I think, was very low scoring at halftime.
Yep.
And then they came out in the second half and had two touchdown drives to start, which put the game in their favor. But it was the kind of game where he didn't put up numbers, Chris. But I thought that game showed just the maturity of playing to a specific game against a really high-level defensive opponent. And I think that's they play a pretty tough schedule this year, some tough road games. And you might see some more games like that than games in which he throws, you know, for 420 and four touchdowns. And it's those kinds of games that very often, from a coaching perspective anyway, say a lot more about a player's development than just the ability to make unbelievable throws, which, of course, he can do any time.
Take us back to that game a year ago. I mean, it was the Taron Johnson pick six down the sideline there that kind of put the game on ice. But Steph Diggs was out, and all of a sudden in the second half, they started throwing to him and didn't stop. What were some of the things you noticed about the tactics of each coaching staff that changed during that game?
Well, you know, the thing that was interesting is the Steelers were very, very aggressive in that game on defense. They played a lot of dime six DBs on third down. They blitzed a pretty good percentage. They played a lot of man-to-man coverage. They felt comfortable doing that. There were snaps in which they doubled Diggs, both when he was inside and even when he was the boundary X, the single receiver to the short side of the field. So, you know, they were very, very aggressive in how they approached the Bills. And the Steelers are always aggressive. They're very proactive defensively. They never play sort of scared where they think, oh, you know, we can't allow big plays. They always feel they can go after you. And I remember that first half was kind of a slog a little bit. And then those first two drives, if I'm not mistaken, of the third quarter was when they started moving the ball. And they were short throws. I don't think Josh had a big he certainly didn't have a long pass in that game, but it was the kind of game that he sort of had to allow the game to come to him. He did make one ridiculously good throw, and that was the touchdown pass to Gabriel Davis,
right,
which in the red zone, obviously defenses change up a bit, and that came against split safety zone. That was a big-time throw.
What do you think will be the Steelers' defensive approach here? I mean, Cameron Sutton looks like he's the guy that moves inside to play nickel, and we're presuming he'll be the matchup with Beasley inside. What do we kind of make of it? Because their secondary has undergone some changes. I know they still have Fitzpatrick,
yes,
but Hilton is gone. So, too, is Steven Nelson. Do you anticipate a similar approach? I don't know if Keith Butler can feel as confident playing as much man as he did the last time.
Yeah, and we won't know that till Sunday.
Yeah.
That's tough to answer. Now, I guess my question to you first is, what's Emmanuel Sanders' status?
He's questionable, but he's practiced all week, and Coach McDermott said today that his foot is improving. So take that for what it's worth, but he was limited in practice all week, but he practiced Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So,
right, because I think his availability is somewhat key to this, because I think you could see, look, last year, let me say it this way. Last year in that game against Pittsburgh, which was late in the season, week 14, they did not play a lot of 10 personnel, Chris.
Right.
You know, not as much as they played in a lot of other games, and that we've come to expect from them. So I guess what I'm trying to figure out, and we won't know the answer, it's an unanswerable, is if Sanders can go, do you think they'll play a lot of 10 personnel, which they did not do a year ago against the Steelers? or will they feel that that Steeler pass rush is still a factor? You know, obviously T.J. Watt's going to play. He just, you know, he just got Steve Tasker money, $80 million guaranteed.
Right.
So he's ready to go.
Congratulations to him.
So, you know, and I think Highsmith is actually a young emerging pass rusher on the other side. So they can rush the passer. It depends on, you know, whether the Bills feel they can protect if they go empty sets, let's say four wide, or mm-hmm. if they need the back in the backfield. This all remains to be seen. But we know that the Bills are going to throw the ball. This team is built on Josh. They're going to throw it. It just depends on schematically and tactically how they go about doing that.
Yeah, and before right. Steve asks his question, we should mention that Alex Highsmith is a major question mark for the Steelers. After practicing on a limited basis Wednesday, he did not practice at all on Thursday with a groin injury. And when Coach Tomlin was, he was asked prior to practice today, what's Highsmith's status for Sunday? He said, wait till the injury report comes out, which doesn't sound
well,
promising.
Well, that's probably not a good sign.
Well, how do you expect this game? Let's say that I know there's a big question marks on the front, you know, the front seven of the Bills defense, the offensive line of the Steelers, then and vice versa, the offensive line of the Bills against the pass rush of the Steelers. Let's say that's a wash. Let's talk about skill positions, the quarterback play. What do you think, given the fact that they went out and I conspicuously took a running back in the first round,
yes,
and a tight
yes.
end in the second round, and they've got Ben Roethlisberger at quarterback. What is your best guess about what this offense will look like with Matt Canada, the new offensive coordinator?
My best guess would be that it will be different from a year ago.
Right.
And I think that the foundation will be a run game. I do not personally believe you draft Najee Harris, who is a big physical volume runner, to give him the ball seven or eight times in a game. I think that you draft him. You draft the second tight end in Freiermuth out of Penn State. You draft Kendrick Green, the center out of, I believe it might be Texas A&M. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's it.
They drafted another offensive lineman,
Kendrick
Dan
Green.
Moore. He may be. Oh, Kendrick Green's out of Illinois. Excuse
right.
me. Moore's out of A&M,
Moore's out
I believe.
Of A&M, right.
You know, with what they did, I would believe that this offense will change from a year ago. So, I would believe that the run game will be much more of a foundation, and you're going to have to line up and defend the run a lot more out of base personnel. But, you know, on the other hand, they've got three receivers who are pretty good. So, you know, this is why week one's so interesting, guys, as you know, and Steve, you know, this, there's a lot of things you don't know week one.
Right.
What do you make of Juju versus Taron Johnson? What about that matchup inside?
Yeah, and again, that comes down as well to how much man-to-man coverage that the Bills will play. They play more man than a lot of people might think. So you will see that matchup at times. Juju's a big physical receiver. Johnson is not small, but he certainly can't match up size-wise
right.
to Smith-Schuster. Smith-Schuster's a good receiver. You know, I think the pass game's going to be different for the Steelers. I think you're going to see more play action. I think I guess what I'm waiting to see is Ben played almost exclusively out of the shotgun a year ago. I'm very curious to see, now that they have Najee Harris, if Ben is more under center and the run game's a little more conventional and traditional, and then they work the play-action pass game off that. Ben has been notorious for not being a big fan of turning his back to the defense. And, you know, obviously if you do conventional play-action with the quarterback under center – your quarterback has to turn his back to the defense.
Right. And yeah. And if it does indeed go that direction, I mean, look at last night, the Cowboys lose that game to the, I don't know if you've seen any of the Tampa Bay Dallas
game. I've seen
game.
Most of the tape.
Right. You know, a guy like Ezekiel Elliott, who's a franchise kind of running back, they got big money invested in him. He gets the ball 11 times. Is the league, I mean, are the Steelers really going to buck the trend that is everywhere else in the National Football League, except perhaps Baltimore, and start handing the football off 25 times a game?
Well, I think there's other teams that do that, Steve, but there's no question people would argue it's a passing league. I don't know if it's sustainable to have Dak Prescott drop back 60-plus times every week. And because it's week one and they played a Bucs defense that is really, really good against the run, we don't know if that's the MO for the Cowboys going forward or if that was a function of the opponent last evening. So that's hard to answer. I just look with a revamped O-line, with Ben a year older, Ben does not move the way he used to. I just don't know if it's viable to have Ben drop back by choice 45, 50 times a game, which they did in a number of games a year ago. Then why draft Najee Harris?
Right.
Yeah. I think they will have a lot more balance to their offense, and I do think Ben's going to be under center a little bit more maybe than even he would prefer based on what we're hearing out of Pittsburgh with new OC Matt Canada. What about Freiermuth, though, Greg? I mean, this is a guy that, you know, would – people are trying to get a read on through the course of the preseason. Obviously, Eric Ebron is still there, but Freiermuth is, you know, a pass-catching tight end. I mean, so he's not probably the same all-around player that Heath Miller was for them for years. He's more of a one-dimensional tight end. How quickly do they incorporate him into the offense, knowing all of the receiving weapons they have at the receiver position?
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned Heath Miller because when I watched Freiermuth's 2019 tape where it was a full season, in 2020 he only played four games, but I watched all those games as well, and I actually made the Heath Miller comparison because he's improved as a blocker. He was better in 2020 as a blocker than he was in 2019, and he's very, very good on third down. He's a red zone weapon. You know, I think he'll be a factor for them. I think the question really becomes, will they play, or how much will they play out of 12 personnel with one back and two tight ends when they have three really quality wide receivers? And I'm not sure we know the answer to that, but I don't think you draft Freiermuth in the second round, Chris. I mean, again, now we're just spitballing here. You know, they draft Harris in the first round.
Yeah.
They draft Freiermuth in the second round. I don't think you do that not to have those guys be a meaningful part of what you're going to do.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, and if you talk about the matchups, if Emmanuel Sanders is in or out of the lineup, how that affects the defensive scheme, that which if Sanders is out, it means, logically that guys like Cole Beasley are going to have more opportunities. What about Cole Beasley's matchup with Cameron Sutton down in the slot? How do you think – we can go around and around about what we expect from Josh Allen and what this offense is going to look like. I think, for me, we've had this conversation, Brownie and I think it's going to be more of the same than it was last year. I think Josh Allen is that guy to drop back and throw.
So do I. Oh, without question. I don't think – look, we talked about this last year as well. Do they want to run the ball? Yes. But I think when they want to run the ball successfully, they don't want to run the ball in big volume. You know, when they do hand it off, they want the run game to be efficient and effective, but this is not going to be a running football team. So I think you're going to see much of the same. Obviously, coaches every offseason tweak things, and they'll tweak certain things they like. They'll tweak, get rid of some things maybe they don't like. But I think the overall philosophy of what this offense is with Josh and the receivers is not going to change.
I think going in, Greg, we knew with all the changes that Steeler offensive line was undergoing this offseason that it probably was not going to be a well-oiled machine in week one, or look like one anyway.
Right.
Now, you know, in the last week, Zach Banner, who was projected to be the starting right tackle, goes on IR. They take Okorafor and move him back to right tackle where he played last year, and they're starting the rookie Moore at left tackle. In a road environment as raucous as Buffalo, facing a veteran pass rusher like Amario Addison, with A.J. Epenesa ready to come in the second wave behind him, I'm just wondering, based on what you saw of Moore's college tape, is this guy up to the task, or are we anticipating he's going to get a lot of help via slide protection or from a tight end? What do you anticipate there on the edge?
I did watch Dan Moore. Well, you're probably not surprised by that. I know
I'm
Steve
not.
is probably not surprised by that either. I did watch Dan Moore, and he played in the SEC. And to be honest with you, and I'm going to qualify this by saying I don't fancy myself as an offensive line guru by any means, but I thought he was a good prospect. Again, I can't speak to all the nuances of technique, but when you play in the SEC and you're facing pretty good pass rushers, you know, you're facing a lot of five-star recruits in the SEC. I thought he did a very good job at left tackle. you know, at the end of the day, his goal was to stop guys from getting to the quarterback, and he did that. And I, you know, you can debate where a guy should be drafted. I don't do that, but he was a fourth round pick, and I thought that his tape suggested he was better than that. So whether he's how good he is week one, I can't answer that, but I thought his college tape indicated that he could line up and play in the NFL.
As we move right away from the AFCs and this Pittsburgh-Buffalo matchup, let's talk a little bit about Miami-New England. Do we not have enough respect for Tua? Because Brownie and I think it's only a matter of time before he's not a Miami Dolphin.
Yeah, that I mean, I certainly can't speak to that, but I think Tua can be a very good player. I think he's a certain kind of player. He's very rhythmic, plays with excellent timing, is very quick feet on his drop, plants, delivers the football. To me, that's what kind of quarterback he is. As this season progresses, they will have very good weapons. I know Will Fuller is not playing this week, but they'll have Fuller. They have Waddle. They've got Parker. They've got pretty much every dimension you could want at the wide receiver position, plus a vertical tight end in Mike Gesicki. So I think Tua is set up well for success there, but Tua to me is a very rhythmic player. I don't believe that he's a late in the down pocket player. I don't think he can sit on his back foot late in the down, 3 seconds in, 3.2 seconds in, and drive the ball. I think that it has to be defined within the structure of the offense so that the ball can come out.
Yeah, and their offensive line isn't in the greatest of shape either, coming into the regular season, because
no.
Austin Jackson went on the COVID reserve list. I'll admit I haven't paid attention to see whether he has a chance to be up on Sunday, but there are some down there who feel that they might be better off without him, and they might start somebody else there at left tackle this week, whose name is escaping me right now. But they've been juggling some stuff down there a little bit, and I don't know if that that's not going to help Tua if he is the rhythmic passer that you describe.
Well, you can. Yeah, you certainly can help your offensive line as well with that kind of game planning. You know, if you're talking five-step drop stuff where you want the ball to come out, your O-line will more than likely hold up. But obviously every game gets to be third and long, and those are the plays that where you can't necessarily help your O-line unless you want to chip, unless you want to keep a tight end or a back in, and then it's a numbers game. Then you're limiting your number of eligible receivers. So you know, that I guess is dependent on how they see their O-line and how they see this particular game against New England playing out.
Go ahead. I am eagerly anticipating the New York Post and Daily News headlines on Monday after the Jets play against the Panthers and their former quarterback, Sam Darnold. If Darnold somehow pulls out a victory, Greg, can you imagine what the back pages are going to look like?
If Darnold wins?
Yeah.
Not only if Darnold wins, what if he lights it up? Then what's going to happen?
Oh, my.
They might just sell the paper with matches.
Well, you know, Carolina is one of those teams that does not get a lot of national attention. And Darnold's had some issues in his first 3 years. I've talked about those through a connection I have in Carolina. From what I understand, he's been coached hard addressing a lot of those issues. Now, whether that happens in the speed of a regular season game, we'll find out. But they've got a lot of weapons. I mean, they've got good wideouts. The Terrace Marshall kid, the rookie from LSU, I liked his tape a lot. From what I understand, he had a very good preseason. We know they have McCaffrey. They've got a good tight end group. They've got weapons. So this their O-line is a concern. But they're playing a Jets defense that I think is lacking in some areas as far as talent. So they may be able to hold up this week.
Okay. I can't wait.
I'm telling you, man, if they win that game.
I am so rooting for Sam Darnold in this game. I am so rooting for it because I just want to see – I just want to watch the world burn, I guess. I guess that's why.
Yeah, you just want the worst for everybody else in the division. That's your problem. Patriots defense, Greg, well, I'll close with that with my last question for you. I mean, they're not going to have Gilmore here at the outset.
No.
But still – this looks like a pretty put-together group, nice mix of young talent and vets.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a pretty good defense. You know, I think getting Kyle Van Noy back is is a really good move for them. He's one of those guys that doesn't necessarily stuff the stat sheet, but you can play him in a lot of different places. He's multidimensional in how he can be used. He's used differently in every game, depending on the nature of the opponent. You know, I guess what I'm interested to see is how Coach Belichick will match up on the perimeter. Obviously, Fuller's not in, as we said, but they do have some speed. Waddle can run. So I'm curious to see because, you know, Bill's played a lot of man coverage over the last number of years. But then there's always that game where you put the tape on and you go, wow, he's playing a lot of zone. And you never know what game that is because obviously we can't get into Coach Belichick's head. But I'm very curious to see the approach that he takes.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be an interesting, fun weekend. Any other games that you're particularly interested in, or players that you've been watching that you're, kind of intrigued by?
Well, there's some other interesting games. I mean, you have Cleveland, KC.
Yeah, that's the one.
I'm actually interested in the Philly Atlanta game. I live in the Philly area, but I'm real curious because Dean Pease is one of those veteran masters as a defensive coordinator, Steve. You know, you probably know about him.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's a lot of disguise, a lot of late movement, a lot of intricate pressure schemes. And Jalen Hurts is making his fifth NFL start. And my guess is that Dean Pease will show him some things that he's never seen before.
Right. Mm.
Yeah, Browns-Chiefs is where it's at for me outside of Buffalo-Pittsburgh. So, there's a good slate this week.
And what are the returns in preseason about Jalen Hurts? What's it look like for him and the new head coach?
From what I understand, I was out there a couple of times, but obviously couldn't be out there all the time. From my understanding is someone I spoke to in the building that he was okay from, let's say, practice 1 through 7, but then you got to practices 8 through 16 and that he really improved meaningfully. You know what that means? That's an unanswerable until they play a regular season game. The question I have for this given game is I think he's going to end up running a lot because I think he's going to get some looks, particularly on third down, where as he drops back, he's still going to be deciphering and he's just not going to be comfortable and he's going to rely on what he knows he can do very well, which is run.
Right.
Greg, as always, we thank you the time. We'll look for you on the NFL matchup show on ESPN this weekend. Thanks for the time. We'll catch up with you next week.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg.
All right. That's Greg Cosell joining us here, senior producer, NFL Films, and also on the matchup show. And if you're going to catch the NFL matchup show on ESPN, catch it right from the start because he said the Bills-Steelers matchup is the first one they are breaking down on the show, him, Matt Bowen, and Sal Palantonio. So
that'll be great. We've been breaking it down for like
yes, we have
days and days. So yeah.
So what are you saying? No need to watch? Or?
Yeah, I should watch. I'll try. I'm gonna maybe DVR that. I want to see it and see what they.
I just like the matchups they pick, the video they show. They really like, especially for somebody like me who did not grow up playing the game. There are some ways that they decipher things and explain things that allow people who are not exactly super well-versed in all of the lingos and stuff.
Right.
They break it down effectively for, you know, the everyman to understand.
I've always thought the best favor you can do for people listening is to make sure they know what you're talking about. So the verbiage and the vernacular that they use in the NFL isn't really handy-dandy in the everyday
life
of
Americans. It's not English.
So you really have to – instead of using the terms that football people know, just describe what you're looking at so that everybody knows what it is. And, it makes it easier.
Yeah.
And they do a nice job of that on the matchup show.
We have to take a break here, but when we come back, I did not mention this at any point prior in the show. We have the latest edition of Tasker's Teammate coming your way.
There you go.
As we put the questions to Steve to see if he can correctly guess which former Bills teammate we are describing. And we'll get to that when we return. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. It is that time in the show where we put the screws to Steve and ask him to channel the deeper recesses of his memory in what we like to call Tasker's Teammate. That's right. Tasker's Teammate brought to you by Wegmans Meals to Go. Delicious meals delivered. Download the Wegmans app today. Steve, are you ready?
Yep.
Clue number one. See if you can guess your former teammate here. Born in Cheek, Texas, I played my high school football at Hampshire Fannett, where I was a standout quarterback. But that would not be the position I played, as I made a change midway through college.
Cheek, Texas.
That's right. They got some weird town names down there, don't they?
Yeah, well.
Some unusual ones.
I think the towns are weird. I'm just being funny.
That's outstanding.
Cheek, Texas.
Standout quarterback in high school.
Quarterback.
Changed positions midway through college.
Cheek, Texas.
Yeah.
Gosh, why does that ring a faint bell? We've had Kenny Davis on already.
We have.
Yeah, we have. He was like number two. Okay. All right, I don't know. Go.
Clue number two.
It was a quarterback and then switched midway through college.
Yeah. I would go on to earn a scholarship as a walk-on at McNeese State and move to the receiver position my junior year, where I caught 63 passes for 949 yards and 7 touchdowns as a senior for the Cowboys.
Russell Copeland.
It is not Russell Copeland.
Al Edwards.
It is not Al Edwards.
Wait, let me look down my list of all the guys we've had on. McNeese State.
That's right. That's in Louisiana, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure. I was okay.
McNeese State. Wide receiver. Oh, come on, bro. McNeese State. I gotta know this. I'm trying to go down the list of receivers in my head. Not Jerry.
There were a lot of them.
Yeah, there's a ton of them. I don't know. Go ahead.
Clue number three. Coming from a small school, I did not get drafted by an NFL club, but signed with Buffalo as an undrafted rookie in 1987.
Lamar Hamilton. Hamilton? No, that's not right. Oh, wait. Knox. The kid.
Not Knox. And not Lamar Hamilton either.
Oh, gosh.
Let me give you the next clue.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I spent my rookie season on injured reserve and even missed the first few games of the 1988 season with a hamstring injury before appearing in 11 games, mostly on special teams.
Flip Johnson.
Flip Johnson is correct. Steve Tasker, well done.
Flip Johnson. I thought Flip was older than that.
No. And, you know, as we know, unfortunately had a short career, but used as a kick and punt returner that rookie season in 88, appeared in 11 games. First career touchdown came in a 37-14 win over the Jets when he pulled in a 66-yard pass from Jim Kelly on Monday Night Football. What a way to score your first touchdown in a league.
You know what I remember about Flip? He was smarter than me. You know, you get to know guys, and they're like, God, he's really sharp.
He's well-read.
He's really sharp,
yeah.
You know? Yeah, Flip was good. And I'll say this. He's the guy that he worked really hard. And
he replaced Chris Burkett, right?
Well, yes. He was going to – they said, listen, it's time to get him on the field. And Chris was going to have to sit down. And Chris left. Chris said, that's it. Get me. And he asked for his
went
release.
To the Jets.
He says, yeah, he asked for his release and he went to the Jets because of Flip. Yeah.
Flip's most productive game would come the following season in his home state of Texas. 5 catches, 86 yards, and a 47-41 shootout win over the Oilers in week 3 of the 89 season.
Was that the overtime game?
I believe it was. 47-41.
Yeah, the Andre Reed overtime game.
But yeah, Flip had 5 catches for 86 yards in that game. Unfortunately, the 89 season would be his last. Not only with the Bills, but in the league. So 27 games played, in, out, and done.
He had a hole in his hamstring after he pulled it that year. I mean, it was like defected. And I don't know, there, but yeah, that was the game back in the old Houston Astrodome.
Yeah,
that's
had some shootouts with that team over the years.
Yeah, we did. That was.
Do you know Flip's given first name?
Philip.
Fulton.
Oh, Fulton.
How about that?
Yeah.
Fulton.
So I guess no, I do not know his
Fulton Johnson.
Yes.
Yeah. So Flip Johnson, the latest Taskers teammate. Unfortunately, we couldn't get him on the line today because we always like catching up.
Flip's
with
around. I've crossed
former
paths
teammates.
With him.
Yeah.
He'll be in Buffalo once in a while. He was doing stuff with Thurm for a while.
Cool.
I don't know if they may still.
Yeah, they're both Texas guys. That makes sense. So I can't pretend to know where Cheek, Texas is exactly on a map of Texas, but I know it's in the
somewhere
state
low,
confines.
Probably somewhere low and on the back of the state.
the western half, right. The drier half.
Something.
So, Flip Johnson, this week's Taskers teammate. We do have some more comments in the OBL Fan Friday mailbag, but we also have one on the phone line. So let's go to Dion in Buffalo at 803-0550. Dion, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hello?
Dion, you're on.
All right, Steve.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
How are you?
Good. What are you doing?
Oh, I'm sitting here watching you guys, and had to go to the VA today for a doctor appointment, but I love my Bills. And I love you, and I love the other guy, which I forget his name.
Yeah. Chris Brown.
I got a question. We got Josh Allen, okay?
Yeah.
He's slinging the ball left, right, over the top, everywhere. But we have no running back for him. We can't wear his arm out, don't you guys think?
Well, yeah, I agree. It's here's the thing, Dion. The whole league is doing that. You look at that game last night. Both quarterbacks threw like 50 times.
I
think it's almost
for over 800 yards.
The way the game is being administrated now, and it's evolved to a point now where it's almost like a 7-on-7 practice. The guy's dropping back and throwing it. And I just think that's the way the league's going. Now I get you. I don't want Josh to have to throw it 60 times, but if he does, he'll be ready for it.
Yeah, but I mean longevity.
I get it.
Think of longevity and. Like all the Super Bowls you went to, we need him to go to that many too.
Yeah, we need to go more than that.
We don't want to wear his arm out too fast.
Right, I get you. But they'll let him recover during the week. They'll find a way around that. Go ahead. What else?
Okay, my next question is the running back situation. I don't know if you agree with me, but I think our running back situation is moot. Singletary's smaller than you, and he's good, but he's not fast.
Well, he's shorter than me, but
you were faster than him. And the other guy, he's from Utah, and he's always hurt.
Well,
now, we got Mostert, and he's supposed to be the fastest guy on the team, from what I heard.
Yeah, Breida. Matt Breida is who you're talking about.
Why did we not draft Najee Harris from Alabama?
Well, he wasn't there.
Yeah. He got taken 24th. Bills picked 30th. So that's number one.
We could have traded up.
Well,
yeah,
you could have.
I got you. Here's
I think
the thing.
More often than not, nowadays teams don't like drafting running backs in round one unless they believe they're exceptional. And even then, they're hesitant to do so. And here's why. You have the first round contracts, which are all 4 years with an option for a fifth year. And do you want to do that with a running back? Because you're really almost never going to get to a long-term, or you shouldn't get to a long-term second contract with a running back, no matter how good they are, just because they don't last in this league. And Ezekiel Elliott, right. The guy you watched last night, is a perfect example. How is his $92 million contract looking right now when he's carrying the ball 11 times a game? That's not a good investment.
And running out of bounds when you need the clock to stop.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, but I'll tell you this, Dion. Here's the thing. Here's my thing. I get you. You'd like to have a bell cow, Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley, McCaffrey guy back there that you can hand the ball to. The Bills are doing it with three different guys. They got Breida, Moss, and Singletary. And I think Singletary's going to be better this year than you've ever seen him be.
Too.
I think he's in for a much better year. But no matter who it is, they're only going to hand it to him so they don't wear their quarterback out, just like you said.
I think that's what I was wondering.
And all those guys,
like I said, Josh can't throw that ball every week like that.
But all those guys are going to be better because the five guys ahead of them are going to have to play better. Yeah. And that's why they drafted two of those guys on the first and second day, and they drafted two pass rushers, and they drafted two offensive linemen, three offensive linemen overall. It all starts up front, Dion. It's not so much about although it is a little bit, obviously, about Singletary, Moss, and Breida. It's also about the five guys up front. And if those five guys up front are dominant, a guy like Singletary, Moss, and Breida are going to be exponentially better without changing the way they play. So I think that's the philosophy the Bills use, and I agree with it. So don't get too upset about what we haven't seen yet. Let's let it play out a little bit before we start making pronouncements about would have been, should have been, could have been.
And Jim threw the ball a ton. How long before he started getting backed off in practice to rest his arm on Friday?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
When he was on the other side of 30.
Yeah, it was late in his career.
Yeah.
And he was like, and I saw this too, and this is just a side point. The one, you know, everybody's comparing this team and the expectations to what it was like when they were going to the Super Bowl all those years. I will say this, when we were watching practice during training camp, you go out there and watch for 20 minutes or watch a couple of periods of practice, and it was just like Jim and Frank Reich with Josh and Mitch Trubisky. Ball never touched the ground, and those guys were throwing it, and it was not getting dropped, and it wasn't incomplete. It was something to see. So that's one way that it's kind of like that here, if you want to look for comparisons, which I know everybody's kind of doing these days, but let's not think about what should have been, could have been with Najee Harris and the offensive line and these running backs. Let's let them play first before we pass any judgments.
We will take a break here, but suffice to say, Dion, and thanks for the call, by the way, that it's basically the running game is basically a complement to the Bills passing game. That's what's happened. You know, back in Steve's day, Thurman was the engine of the offense, and Jim threw the ball all over the place. The way you win in the NFL on offense has flipped. It's about having a quarterback that can throw the ball 40, 45 times a game, and you complement him with a running game that is at least functional and effective. And the Bills are a model of that. When we come back, we'll have a couple of last questions to answer in the OBL Fan Friday mailbag. Stay tuned here on One Bills Live. Welcome back. A couple more questions in the fan mailbag before we go for the day. Daryl Williams, this is from Scott. Daryl Williams held his ground very well last year while facing TJ Watt, which he did. Do you believe Daryl will have the same success again this year? Also, what are your thoughts on the Bills' run D this year? Without Star on Sunday, it's going to be a tougher road to hoe. I don't think there's any question about that. We'll have to see how capable and effective Harrison Phillips, Vernon Butler are with Justin Zimmer and Ed Oliver inside. They're down their most important run stuffer.
Yeah.
So it's going to have to be an adjustment.
It's an adjustment that they made for, 16 games last year.
So it's nothing new.
And the thing that gives you angst is you've got a team coming in, and there's a lot of unknowns like we've been talking about. I mean, there's a lot of angst coming over in with the Pittsburgh team coming in here who might want to hand the football off 35, 40 times.
Right.
You know, you got that feel, and you're not going to have your interior run defender there. So that gives you some,
Daryl Williams, I agree with Scott, did pretty good with TJ Watt. He's such a wide body, it takes so long to get around him. If you don't win on the initial move, Watt's probably not getting there. And that's what happened in last year's game with Daryl Williams. Daryl played a really good game against him, and he did not get a lot of help from anybody. It was him and Watt, and he fared well, I thought.
But the Steelers did bring a lot of pressure. They were,
yes.
And like Greg Cosell told us during that segment, the Steelers came out and were very aggressive against the Bills' offense in the pass rush and up front last year. We'll see if they mimic that. The Bills started to answer it in the second half of that game, scored a couple of quick touchdowns after halftime. But that, going into this game, there's a ton of question marks, and it's going to be up to the coaching staff on both sides of the field to come up with answers and adjust on the fly.
Enjoy the game on Sunday. Steve and I will be back on Monday to break it all down. We will be on at noon. Remember, Mondays, we're a full 3 hours breaking this game down with you. And don't forget to listen to our podcast to take you right up till game time. One Bills Light on all your podcast platforms. New and numbers-related discussion. Be sure to check it out. We'll see you Monday.